Welcome to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your hosts, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows and Cody Kellum of Born and Raised Outdoors.
It's pretty quiet.
Oh, yeah. You know,
we didn't have to take our pants off.
No, no. No pants were removed in this dog.
At GoHunt.com, our goal is to be the very best at what we do. We are constantly putting value and new information at our users' fingertips. It's our job to always go above and beyond for our customers. We don't want you to stress days of researching or paying hunting consultants to give you unreliable and opinionated information before your hunt. That's why we're giving you the power and ability to find exactly what you want when you want it. And with the introduction of draw odds and filtering 2.0, it's never been easier. So why wait? Join the movement today and start finding the perfect hunt for you. Go Hunt Insider, the new breed of hunter. Visit GoHunt.com/insider and join the movement.
All right. Welcome to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox, and we are on top of a mountain in Colorado. So we don't have Cody Kellum with us today. He is, I think, just wrapping up his elk hunt there in Oregon with the guys from Hushin, if I remember correctly. And then, Let's see, where is he heading next?
He's headed to Wyoming, I believe.
Was it Wyoming?
I thought he said that he wanted to hunt early with Corey over there.
Yeah, you're right.
Because I saw Dirk said he's on his 9 days out from his hunt a couple days ago.
Yeah, so joining us, we have Kendall Card, Wes Smith, and Jay Byers. And we are lacking one member of our group, Justin Gordon. And it's actually, I had intended on doing a nightly kind of recap podcast, and well, it hasn't really happened. We're 5 days into our hunt now. It's Wednesday the 30th, and we've had a ton of action. Justin had to run out of the mountains for 3 days of work, and so he's actually coming back in tonight. But we'll start kind of on the opening day, I guess, recapping what we've done thus far. Starting out from the top of the ridge there, what'd we see? A couple dozen bucks in that basin there?
I thought it was like 23 at least.
Yeah, I think you're 20. Yeah, I think it was 23 that we had counted.
A ton of elk across the way.
Oh, yeah. Elk coming out the wazoo.
Yep, and we had a 5-point raghorn bull that bedded down on this exposed finger ridge with, what do you have, like half a dozen or eight cows or something like that?
Something like that.
And he bedded there until like 10:30 in the morning. It was unbelievable. Last year, that group of elk bedded right below us, directly below us, and they were bedded till, similar time, hours. Never seen elk do that where they're just so relaxed, they were so comfortable that they just bedded.
Out in the open.
In the open.
Yeah.
No one around.
Yeah, it was pretty wild.
And he was full velvet still.
That bull, that five point? No, he was stripped out.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, he looked velvet to me.
No, he was stripped out.
There was sunlight on him and it looked really fuzzy.
Oh, gotcha.
So he unfortunately had a number of bucks and some of his cows that were bedded around him in positions that weren't conducive to a stalk. So I wasn't able to stalk him, but there was a couple of big bucks in that group. One that Kendall got a stalk on, or in that basin, I should say, that we were calling Basket Case, or Kendall nicknamed the Basket Case. He's a really cool looking deer. Had, was he maybe 24 wide, probably the widest?
Wasn't super wide.
Yeah, but just super tall. His back tines, his G2s, I bet you they were pushing 18 inches somewhere in that range.
And they're probably only about 5 inches apart.
Yeah, they came up.
Almost touched, it looked like.
Then he had a kicker coming off of his back. But the coolest part about him was that his main beams kind of curved out like normal, but then did this kind of weird corkscrew drop that made him almost, when I first saw him, I thought they were drop tines coming off his main beam, but they're actually just his main beam on both sides kind of went wonky there in the front. And we got some video of him, so I can't wait to check it out through the Digiscope there. Be fun one to sit there and analyze and try and figure out what he scores. Is trying to figure out what his beam length would be, it would be pretty challenging. I got a stalk on a buck though, that I was actually going after one of the bigger ones that had bedded within probably 15 feet of that bull, and I was just going to go over there and then kind of post up and see if, you know, that bull got up when, because his cows were kind of starting to get up and move along, and I was hoping that they would pull that that bull over and then I'd have a shot at that buck. But got distracted by a buck that was bedded under some rim rock, and it was one of those deer that it was a nice buck, but it was one of the kind of marginal as far as, you know, what you wanted to haul out of the mountains. And I'd have been super happy with him, but it was, you know, we've been looking at, you know, a bunch of bigger bucks, but this guy bedded in such a killer spot, and the closer Wes and I got to him, then the better he looked and the better that position where he was bedded looked. So I decided, well, what the heck, I'll go over there and just poke my head over the top of that rim rock where he's bedded and then make my mind up then. And I knew if I got that far, that arrows would be flying.
You already knew you were going to shoot him.
Yeah.
We were watching from, you didn't know it at the time, but Jay and I was trying to stalk a buck that was higher up on the face.
Yep.
And Jay and I were moving over and saw you guys coming in, and I knew, I was like, he's going to kill that buck the second you look over that rock.
Yeah.
Like you went, it's like a kid in a candy store with free candy.
Oh, man. Yeah, once you got tension on the bowstring, it's pretty hard to back down at that point once the adrenaline starts pumping. So we, Wes and I stopped. We came in pretty close. Actually, there's a bunch of rim rock on this face, and I pointed out the rim rock. It's like, okay, Wes, he's bedded right under there. And Wes is like, no, he's on the next one down. I'm like, no, dude, he's on under that one right there. Wes is like, all right. So we went up above the upper rim rock, took our boots off and then started sneaking down the hill and got right above the upper rim rock. And I look over and realize, yeah, it is the next one down. So the next one down luckily was just like another 50 or 75 yards down the hill or so. So Wes had already, he was wearing some pants that had some nylon on them. So he had already taken his pants off so it wouldn't make noise, because there was like no wind, you know, just like dead, still, quiet. And he didn't want to, you know, we were going to be popping over the top of this rock within, you know, certainly under 20 feet of this buck and probably closer to 15 feet. So when we dropped off that second, off that, you know, the upper rim rock, and started making our way down, about halfway down, we got into some low willows. And so I took my pants off as well so that I could slip through those willows without making noise. Cause at that point I knew we were within, you know, 20 yards of where that buck was bedded. And
the funny thing was, is I wanted to take my pants off early because we hadn't had a video over the shoulder like that yet, and I knew that if I freaking scared that buck or screwed that up, then we would not have another over the shoulder, you know, shot, because South wouldn't want me to screw it up again. So I was like, you know what, I'm just taking my pants off right now. I knew we were 120 yards from the deer, but I was like, yep, they're coming off. So there they went.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it's funny. I get you know, I get a lot of people laughing and some people heckling and some people, you know, my wife hates it. She's like, I don't want to be married to somebody who's known as a stripper. It's like, you better not take your pants off again. Oh, it's pretty funny. But man, I'll tell you, it is like deathly quiet. You know, you don't have any fabric rustling against anything, you know, either swishing against your legs or scraping against, you know, bushes or anything like that. I mean, I think the only way that would be as quiet as if you're wearing like merino, some really soft merino long underwear, or if you had polar fleece on. And obviously polar fleece is too hot up here, but I think you could, you know, do a merino long john bottoms, and that would work really well also. But I wasn't wearing merino, so we snuck up to the edge of the, right up to the edge of the rim rock, and I got on the kind of the most prominent point that stuck out the furthest, where I figured this buck was going to be. And I kind of got up to the edge, and it was kind of like a super steep slide coming off the top of this rock. So it wasn't straight down. And I poked my head out as far as I could without losing my balance. And I could see the front forks of the deer, and I could see the deer's nose, and I could see his front hooves there. And, you know, I knew I wasn't going to be able to get a shot from that position because I couldn't reach out far enough. And I was able to tell the body position. So I what I needed to do was to circle around to the left. And then there's another rock, and I thought I could get a shot from that point back underneath the rock this deer was bedded under. And so Wes went over and was videoing from where I had first popped out. And I circled around and started to ease up from, you know, behind this other rock to step up onto it. And, you know, I'm 15 to 18 feet directly above this buck, and I figured there's no way he's going to see me, but I could just see the top of his eye. And much to my surprise, he picked up movement as I came up on, you know, onto that rock, and he just kind of pivoted his head for a split second, like he was going to look, you know, in that direction where he caught the movement. He just exploded out of his bed, bounded down the hill. I stepped up on top of that rock at the same time and kind of raised my bow in preparation in case he stopped. And sure enough, I don't know, he's maybe 25 yards or so down the hill. He stopped and then turned his head to look back up the hill, and he's steep quartering, steep downhill shot. And I drew back, held, cut the shot, and just smoked him. And he took off barreling down the hill, and I didn't get great penetration. I heard a crack like I'd hit some bone, and I figured I caught the offside shoulder. This deer ran, you know, down and kind of round the corner, and I could just barely see some dead jack pines, and he went into those jack pines, and then a couple seconds later came out the other side. And then I wasn't sure if that was him or another deer. And then I lost sight of him again. And then I saw a few seconds later him cut, or a deer cut to the left there. So I had, you know, visual on him for probably, 150 or so yards, it seemed like, quite a ways. And I thought he went down in those jack pines and then just pushed out another deer that, that kept going, or, you know, kind of got spooked and then went out. So Wes and I are celebrating. I thought, you know, I just smoked this buck, and we decided we go over and try to get a Colorado double on opening day, and I try to shoot that bull, but he wasn't there. And meanwhile, unbeknownst to us, Jay and Kendall had been watching this whole stalk unfold, and Jay was shooting pictures. So he actually got some pictures of Wes and I on top of the rock with that deer barreling away, you know, from us. And then he got another picture of it when it had stopped down on the other side of those jack pines. So after, I don't know, well, you could pick up on, because you had a stalk there, and I think we ended up bumping that buck that you were stalking.
Could have, because, like, I was coming, it was kind of weird being on top of, I was way higher on that pyramid face, and it was funny looking down, and I saw you guys cut under, and I knew the buck was still there that I was going after. But I think when you guys moved back to the buck, you know, what you went mm-hmm. out to get that big buck, and you came back, and I was looking down, and I saw you turn around after you shot, and then we had agreed if you shot a buck, then you would bugle.
Yeah.
Then Wes would bugle, and then we'd come help you. And then so right when I saw Wes like lift up, I was probably 25 yards from where eventually it was an empty bed. I think the buck had busted just a little bit before that when it saw you. But Wes bugled, and I was like,
you guys are waving. I'm like, stop waving. We're making noise. Don't move.
I had no idea at that point you're stalking your buck and we were carrying on. I'm waving my bow and all of this. And yeah, it was kind of
I'm like, I see
there.
You guys. Don't quit doing that. I thought maybe that buck, maybe there was a, because it was tiered a little bit. So I thought maybe that buck couldn't quite see you guys, but the bed was empty when I finally got there. It was a fun stalk regardless, but it was anyway, I felt like crap though that first day, so I was like, just as soon just get down and help you find that.
Yeah, so we all converged on the spot where I had shot, and I then kind of tried to follow or pick up. You know, we already had known kind of the where he went, you know, 150 yards from where I shot, but we tried to kind of follow along for a blood trail, and I could pick up some tracks here and there. It was a high entrance wound, and with the penetration, I wasn't sure that I'd gotten an exit, so I wasn't expecting, you know, a fantastic blood trail, but much to my surprise, I found only, well, the whole search, we only found one pin drop of blood that was about half the diameter of a BB, and I never found the arrow. Got down into where the jack pines were, figured for sure where the buck had stopped. We figured we'd pick up some blood or find him right there, and didn't find anything there. So we stopped, we reviewed the video and realized that I thought I hit him back towards the last rib, you know, angling forward towards that front shoulder. And it looked actually from the video that I caught him closer towards the shoulder. And then Jay zoomed in on the picture that he had shot, of the buck with us in the foreground. And, then we could more clearly see that he had a blood spot kind of higher. It was kind of high on his shoulder, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty high on his shoulder, and it was drip. It looked as if it was, you know, you could see blood down his whole body.
Yeah.
But we weren't able to pick any of it up.
But it didn't look like it went, like, all the way down. Like,
right.
It looked like it went a good 3/4 of the way down his body, so I suppose it could have been.
So it was kind of a mystery as to what happened with the shot. I don't know that I made it internally into the body cavity, into the chest cavity, to get any of the goodies there. But we, you know, as soon as you turn the corner where that buck went, it's like a sea of willows and jack pines that are anywhere from knee to waist deep. And I mean, you could literally be standing 3 or 4 feet from the buck and it'd be on the, you know, wedged into the willows, and you would have had no idea. So we wandered around the willows for a while and, didn't find any blood, didn't find an arrow, didn't find any trace of that deer. And I'm still mystified as to, you know, what exactly happened. And, you know, you're looking at the small screen of a video camera and it's pretty hard to tell, and it doesn't have, you know, slow motion replay. So, I got a feeling I'm not going to know what happened until we get it on a big screen and get a chance to review it, you know, and kind of stop frame and then see what happened. And I mean, that's really a bummer to hit, you know, and especially when you think you make such a clean shot there and then it ends up that, you know, that all you did is, I don't know if that deer is dead up there or if it's, you know, just a non-fatal hit. My gut feeling, we've been back in that basin now 5 days and, haven't seen, you know, any signs of, you know,
smelled anything either. We were in there real close just 2 days ago and.
Yep. No, decaying carcass.
No birds.
Yeah, no ravens. And so I got a feeling I made a non-fatal hit on that buck. I mean, when he tore out of there, he wasn't going on three wheels or anything like that. So I didn't break a shoulder or anything. And it's pretty baffling as to what happened. But that basically chewed up, you know, the rest of opening day there, trying to figure out, you know, where that deer was and recover him. And
South, what goes through your mind at the point where you're like, you're going to stop searching? And I mean, psychologically, we all talked about this. We've all been,
we've all lost animals, and it affects everyone differently. But what went through your mind when you finally decided, all right, we're going to stop searching? Like, how do you reach that point? Because I'm sure there's plenty of guys that listen to this podcast that
sure
think about
yeah,
that
like
or wonder.
When do you draw the line?
Or
when
guys,
do you pull the plug?
Yeah, or guys that have never had that happen, they uh-huh. will. If you are, yeah. I mean,
I hope you don't.
I know.
Yeah. I hope no one has to ever deal with that.
Yeah. But what went through your mind? At what point do you kind of, and then how do you, I guess, psychologically recover from that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I mean, one, you know, never wants to hit and lose, you know, a deer or lose anything. And, I mean, I guess in one sense, you know, trying to reconcile it and not to try to justify it at all, but to realize that, this is not directly answering your question, but I'll jump to that. But talking about losing, you know, and then thus the thought of wasting an animal is that nothing really goes to waste up here. You know, if you look at it from the perspective of all of these, you know, other animals that live up here that are carnivorous, the coyotes, the weasels, the
foxes.
You know, fox, the ravens, all
bears.
These, yeah, the bears, all these animals, you know, will consume that carcass, or whichever one comes across it will consume it. So, it's not going to just, you know, rot away and be a waste. It's going to go back into the food chain. And, you know, I'm not saying that to justify,
no, it's an interesting perspective.
That's a great perspective. I'd never even considered that.
Yeah, neither did I.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's a waste in that it doesn't end up on your family's table and your friend's table and you, the person that's hunting it, consuming it, but something, and chances are a lot of somethings, some other critters will be consuming that animal. And so I try to kind of keep that in perspective, you know, and it doesn't, you know, necessarily make a person feel better, or feel like, you know, you can just go out there and be irresponsible and taking long shots or shots that are maybes instead of taking shots that you are extremely, you know, confident that you can make. I'm a strong proponent of shooting within your means, you know, and taking ethical shots. And that buck, you know, it was well within my effective range, and I did make I felt like I made a good shot, and I don't know if it was that I shot a little bit to the left. I picked a spot that was a little bit too far to the left, or, you know, what happened. I don't think that buck moved until the arrow got to him. So I don't think that was a case of that happening. But when we were on that search and we were not finding any blood, and we had, you know, conditions that were really stacked against us in that it wasn't like we were searching an area where you could spot that deer if it were to have piled up from, you know, 10 feet to 50 yards to 100 yards or something like that. I mean, you literally would have had to have stepped on that buck. And the fact that he had gone 150 yards and then when he went around that corner and I lost sight of him, he was still going, you know, or
full speed.
Yeah.
He was motoring.
Yeah. So,
yeah, no, we looked, I mean, I was looking under pine trees.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was so thick in there.
Right. And it's, I mean, you know, we were looking at hundreds of acres of where that buck could have gone. And, I realized the futility. I mean, I walked, you know, down several hundred yards from the last point that I had seen that deer, and I was, you know, going on trails and I was getting to prominent little spots and I was trying to glass into the willows where I could get above them and all that. But I just realized it was, you know, totally futile to think that we were going to walk up on that buck and find him. And then not even knowing at that point if that deer was fatally hit, and kind of, you know, looking at where the blood was on the shoulder and, you know, kind of what we had looked at when we reviewed the video, I personally have a strong feeling that that deer is still alive and still running around. And so at that point, I kind of weighed everything and still leaves you a sick feeling in your stomach. And you go from, this elation of making this awesome stalk and sneaking up and making what I thought was a great shot and a great clutch shot too. It's not like I popped over that rock and I had all the time in the world to compose myself and shoot when I was ready. It was one of those where buck jumps up, runs down the hill, stops. I got to make, split second calculations in my head. And I felt like, man, I cut a great shot. And it looked, and that goes to perception is not always reality. I felt and thought like I made a perfect hit on that buck and it turns out it wasn't. So
in all essence, it was a done deal. And you acted that way too. Mentally, I was already thinking, well, looks like Sal's going to be getting after some bulls tomorrow.
Right away. My thought was I was already.
You already said that in the video.
Yeah. I was said, I thought I was going to be stalking bulls 10 minutes after I made that shot. So as far as I was concerned, we still had that 5-point bedded down right over the crest of the roll of the hill there. But,
I wanted to just know what goes through your mind.
Yeah.
And you bring up a really good point about, I think if we see deer like on the side of the road down where we live, of course, mm-hmm. that is almost entirely waste.
Right.
I'd never given it thought that the reality is, I mean, something dies in this basin, for example, where we're sitting, it's gone within a day or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff is coming along and benefited from that.
Yeah, there's a lot of smaller animals and bigger ones too that will consume that carcass
of that it stays in the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting perspective I've never considered before, and I think that sounds pretty.
And of course, you don't use that as rationale for
but it's
risking
it's,
things, but it
maybe it lightens the load a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah, no, certainly it. It's gonna happen even if. You do everything right. Eventually, an animal is going to take a step and that arrow is going to, impact or bullet is going to impact it in a spot where, you're not going to recover it, or the animal's going to, maybe you made the perfect shot, but that deer runs off, doesn't leave a blood trail, and then beds in a spot or piles up in a spot that you just, you search and search and search and you can't find it. And you do everything right, but, just some variable happens and you don't recover the animal, and it's heartbreaking, and it should be. Nobody should feel okay about hitting an animal fatally or non-fatally and not have some kind of emotion behind that. But I mean, that's kind of one of these things that when you're hunting and when you're bow hunting, and particularly I think when you're hunting in the mountains and you're putting in so much effort and there's all these highs and lows of emotions, and that's one of the things that draws me to bow hunting. I think that it's real, it's as real as you can get. So that kind of wrapped up opening day, and then day two was was crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you tagged out first. Kendall, why don't you tell us what happened on your end?
So we left camp, went up to a different ridge, looked out, because the first day Justin had kind of peeled off, and instead of hooking up with him, we opted to go after that buck that I ended up stalking an empty bed. I also was feeling, it's the first time first time since I up on the Grand Teton a dozen years ago that I got altitude sickness, or I just felt like garbage that first day. It's nauseous. So I was psyched that the second day I woke up feeling really well, but we went up that saddle through to a second little, what we call a sheep shoot. And, Justin had immediately glassed up a couple of monsters. One in particular, this just, and it was so in my mind, I had kind of already written the day off. I was like, well, looks like Justin's going to chase this buck. And so, but we saw, Jay, how many deer were there?
We saw close to 20 bucks that. And that's that morning session in that area.
They were all feeding just in this one little basin above this little lake, and then they started separating. A bunch of them, all of them but four, went over it in the next basin, and then we picked up, there were a half a dozen that were bedded in that basin too. So we quickly, Justin said, hey, you're going to go after those bucks. There was one big gray one. He wasn't super tall, but he was really, really wide and just beautiful gray body. That's kind of the one I picked out that I wanted. But I would have, you know,
all
four of them were really nice bucks.
Beautiful bucks, all like 4 points or better, and they were all tall, and the one, that gray one, had good width. The other ones were just nice and tall.
So they bedded down. The three of them bedded kind of in the kind of the just the top of the willows. The one that I ended up calling Rock Lobster, because he had this real crabby front, but instead of being like a typical
inline,
it was twisted, so it actually went out like a claw.
It looked like a lobster claw.
And he was bedded up underneath these rocks, and he just hung out in this little rock cave.
Kind of like up above, the other three had bedded in these little willows, and he was 60 yards away, 50 yards away, or whatever.
We just sat there and actually enjoyed some breakfast, and we were pretty mellow. And we, Justin knew, I mean, I don't have as much experience, obviously, as you guys up here, you know, in South, you call it all the time. These deer will, they'll bed, and then they'll only be in those beds for, oh, maybe an hour tops, and then they kind of get up. And so these guys were in the sunlight, and they got up and started feeding. So we opted to bail. So we bailed down the sheep chute, wrapped around the first knob, and then went around the second knob down low, expecting we could see them. And I don't think they pegged us, but we just had a bad angle. So we wrapped around back up to where Justin.
Well, they had moved out from where they were. That gray one had bedded in a different spot. We came around and saw him, and he was looking in our direction, but he just kind of moseyed off. I don't know if he just didn't like where he was, or that sun was too hot against the rock, or we just caught him at the wrong time. Maybe he saw a little bit of movement, but they just like wandered around further up into the basin.
Which was advantageous, because we then kind of, our plan B was, instead of wrapping around and come up underneath the lake there, our plan B was to go up and over the saddle, kind of come in up, like above or next to him. And it's where Justin killed his buck last year. And there's all these kind of boulders on this saddle before it pitches up. And we snuck up into there, and they had bedded up against these cliffs, just kind of cross hill from where we were. And we had horrible wind. The wind was actually whipping right in their direction. And as soon as Jay and I got up to that corner, the two of the bucks stood up, and they didn't like what they, I mean, they were still 200 yards off, 180 yards off, but so they got up, and then they kind of wrapped around this corner. And the only approach at that point was to go high, kind of mountain goat style, cross this rock face, and then up on this grassy, like benchy, right up underneath that saddle that comes in from the other side. And so, and Jay and I had seen bucks up in there the day before. So Justin hung back, and we went up, and I just kept thinking, we got to get it as high as possible. I wasn't sure where those cliffs kind of wrapped that corner right below that saddle.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to mosey over there, and we're just climbing up on this grassy, rocky, light face, get up real high. And all of a sudden, then we realize that the cliff they're under is way down, probably 40 yards below.
It looked like
us.
A rollover to what we thought was cliffs. Turned out it rolled over just into like a flat, grassy basin. So, and we could see the whole top of the basin then. So we knew they had to be, if they were still in the basin, which there was a while there, it was very much of an if.
There was only one spot where they could have been.
There was only one spot they could have been, because we could see everything else. If they were still around, they had to be directly below us.
Right below us. So I popped my shoes off at that point and started down. And Jay, back up a little bit. Jay said, he said to me, he goes, you got your 20. And I'm like, I was like, what is he talking about? I go, yeah, Jay, I've got four pins, 20, 30, 40, and 50. I'm like, what kind of question is that?
So you're shooting a slider sight.
The black gold. Four, and I run four pins. I like that configuration, so I have them build that for me. So I'm like, yeah, Jay, 20, 30, 40, 50. I got it. And I'm like, what a stupid question. I'll get to that in a moment, but we're easing down just real, real slow. And it's like rock, little ledge to grassy rollover to rock, little ledge to grassy rollover. Couple little
spots. Pretty quiet from the like beautiful, like it wasn't gravelly. It wasn't rocky. No. It was like solid rock and good grass.
Perfect stalking.
So it was pretty quiet.
Oh yeah. You know,
we didn't have to take our pants off.
No, no. No pants were removed in this stalk. In fact, I thought, afterwards, I thought, man, I got pretty dang close with pants. I don't know what Sal's doing.
Guy can't sneak very well.
Apparently. But so we got down, and Jay had asked, and this is what I love about hunting with you, Jay, is that, I mean, I can't remember the last time we hunted where we both had bows. What was that time where you killed that
deer? Yeah, my deer last year.
Your deer last year. But we rarely hunt with bows together. I'm always with a bow and you're always with a camera. And so the coolest thing is Jay always says, you know, you worry about killing and I'll figure out the photos. And that's as much as he wants to get the shot, he's always respectful of the reason we're there is for, you know, us, me to succeed or whoever he's with to succeed. So he actually asked, like, you know, do you want me to come with you or do you want me to stay up here? And I said, no, come along. And so we got within about 20 yards and I said, Jay, you better take off your boots. And you probably still could have got in there without him, but I
took my boots off right there, but then we only went another 10 yards maximum.
And then I slipped down that last.
We saw Justin. We looked back. Who was pointing for us had dropped off the ridge. So he was out of sight from the bucks and was waving his arms at us. And I just happened to glance back, see Justin. And I'm like, oh, Justin's trying to get a hold of us. And in my mind, because I was at the point where I'm like, we're so close, we can see the whole basin. These deer must have vanished on us. And I binal over to Justin. He's waving his arms like an X motion. And then he makes this motion that they're just over the cliff below you.
Like double hands. Like
two hands, like pointing downhill. And I was like, oh, Kendall. Justin's trying to tell us something. I'm like, I think he's saying they're right below us. And then we get down like another 10 yards after I have my boots off. And we were looking over the edge and Kendall's probably like 5 yards to my left. And I see tines for the first time. And I'm like, I back up. I'm like, Kendall, they're right there.
Isn't that crazy when they're right there?
Yeah.
And I
was enough to his left. I couldn't, without climbing back up two or three steps, I couldn't look in there and see. And you think,
and so then I stayed right there because I that was close enough for me, and I knew I could see the deer, and I could see where we had talked about Kendall getting to shoot down off this rock in some way. I don't need to get any closer for me, and then it's only going to be twice the amount of pant noise it would be.
Yeah.
So we didn't.
So I slipped over this one more little like knob. And then down onto this point, and I was right, and there was a V. There was almost like two points side by side, and a V in between. And Jay was looking straight down the V, and I just kind of put my head over the V, and I could see that the buck that we called Rock Lobster, and he was kind of sprawled out, his full body. So his head was away from me, and his full body was coming back, and then his legs were kind of pointing uphill towards me.
Was he looking back up the hill in your direction?
No, he was looking out, like away, opposite direction. It was perfect.
Wow. Cool.
And I couldn't see the other bucks. And I had, at that point, I mean, I'm just an opportunist. So I was like, perfect shot. I've got all the time in the world and it's the buck I can see. I'm not going to wait for him to jump because immediately in front of them, probably not even 10 yards was a boulder field. So they had wedged themselves between this cliff and this boulder field where there's a little strip of grass that then moved uphill into the upper reaches of this little teeny basin where Jay and I had kind of come down into. And so I had an arrow already knocked at that point, and I drew, and then just, I took about a half a step out, lowered, I mean, it was pretty, you know, classic South Cock shot. It was straight down on top of a cliff, and I just settled my pins on and shot, and I was in complete shock because I had missed at 8 yards. I ranged it afterwards. It was 8.4 yards, and I, if I didn't hit him, I gave him a haircut right on his spine. And so he moved just to get up, and he pushed the arrow over. It was standing, it was straight up in the ground. And at this point, I'm like, I just kind of stood there like, what just happened? So, and I pre-ranged, I said, if they jump, I pre-ranged like four different rocks kind of down that edge of that boulder field, because it fanned out and the grass area got bigger as it went down. And all four bucks, like he stands up and he just stays there.
Just stood there.
Like, and I think he'd stepped over the arrow.
Uh-huh.
So the arrow,
he had knocked it over.
He had tipped it when he,
yeah.
So he's standing there, and I'm like half going like, what just happened? So I pull another arrow, and I'm trying to get it knocked, and I got it knocked and put my release on, and it flicked. So it kind of fell off into the rest. I'm sure nobody else has ever had that happen. And I'm frantically trying to get it back into play. Got it set, and then he bounds off, and the other three bound out at the same time. And they all go down, and he ends up being the closer one. And it, at this point, it's you've probably mentally been there. At this point, I'm already focused on him, even though the big gray one was the one I really wanted.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like I had tunnel vision for him because he had already been like
One shot at him. You didn't know. Like if you didn't graze him or like who knows.
There was like a moment though when I stood there looking like, how did that arrow not go in him?
Yeah.
Like it's in the ground right next to him.
Right.
I mean, all the things, the million things that you think of within a half a second.
Yeah.
So he rolls out to about 40. And he just stands there, and the three of them are behind him. And so I drew back. I'm still standing at this point on that ledge. Drew back, shot, and I miss again. And I'm like, and at this point, I'm so flustered with myself that I just sit down right on that ledge because they're all looking back up at me. And so I'm like, I'm going to sit down so I don't stand out. And I sit down, and the bucks kind of jump another 10, 15 yards, and he goes farther. So I see this other reddish one, and at this point, Jay, I think you were thinking, "Oh, he's going to drill the big gray one."
Oh, I told you. I thought you were going to like from the get go. I'm like, "Oh, beautiful shot, biggest one, 40 yards, like perfect." And then he shoots over the littlest one. Okay.
Right over his back. I'm like, so at that point, I range the next reddish buck.
Which is the closest one at that point.
Which is the closest one at this point, and he's at 62 or 61. And I look at my sight because my pins are 20, 30, 40, 50, right, Jay? And then I realize my error, and I had left my pins at 64 from the night before when we practiced here in camp.
Right.
And classic error, classic mind fart messing that up. So I realized at that point what I'd done, and I, you know, trying to suppress my frustration and trying to concentrate at the same time, drew back, and that buck was quartering away, and the other three were a little farther down, and shot, and I hit him back, and I just immediately see his leg drop, and I
it was just in front of his hind quarter, and probably 3 or 4 inches up into his guts.
And I know from gutting, from cleaning him out, I know I caught the edge of the femur down through and out the guts. And now my frustration boils over. I'm
mental meltdown.
I can see he's not going, because he bounds out a little bit farther.
Yeah, and he moved like 5 yards.
He went out a little bit. Yeah.
20 yards.
Yeah.
And so the other ones went further. It stopped again, and everyone's looking back at us, but you could tell, you know, and anyone who's gut shot a deer before. They kind of hunch up, like their back goes, yeah. You can tell like
and that leg dropped.
They're not he was doing kinda... well. Yeah, his rear leg that was facing us was kind of hanging there, and his back was arched, so you knew he wasn't doing real well.
I could see blood. I could see some blood coming out that hind leg, and so I was just frustrated though, because you want to make a perfect shot, like you were talking about earlier, South. I had already missed two gimmies, one gimme, especially. And what's interesting is that backing up moments before I got down to that final spot, I was like, huh, today's Sunday. And all of a sudden that U2 song, Sunday Bloody Sunday, comes into my mind. I'm like, that is the most random thing ever. I'm like, I'm going to kill. And so anyway, I went from like this high expectation to now I'm frustrated. I'm disappointed. But I see him out there and I almost didn't shoot again. And I, you know, just go back to like, as long as they're still standing, I'm going to put another arrow in him. So I range him as the 81. And, you know, I guess the asterisk here is I regularly practice that distance.
And, one for a second shot, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, and I was like,
if I can mark an arrow in,
yeah, you're going to take a shot because sure. What do you have to lose?
Nothing at this point. And so I draw back and I center punched him. It was like pop. In fact, Justin, clear down on the ridge,
it was 200-300 yards away.
He was like, dude, it sounded like the air just like got cleanly knocked out of him. So double lunged him, and that was the fatal shot for
you
sure.
You went 20 yards maybe. Bedded down after standing there for 5 seconds, and 15 seconds later, head was down.
Yeah. So it was pretty, I laugh now. I can't even hit a buck at eight and a half yards, but 81, I'll center punch him. But, so it's pretty cool. We rolled down there. It's the first time that actually Justin, he's the one that introduced me to archery 9 years ago, and the first time that he'd ever seen me execute on an animal. He's helped me pack out plenty of animals, but it's usually phone calls later.
Right, at midnight.
Midnight phone calls. So that was really cool. And obviously, you know, to have Jay there, it's been awesome to hunt with Jay a lot. So I was really psyched. I mean, when we got down to the buck, I mean, he is super tall, like on his back, his G2s, and he's real deep fork, pretty deep fork on this G2, G3.
C2 and 3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he was pretty awesome. I was just super, super, super psyched. And the flies had already descended pretty hot, pretty heavy. So we made quick decision of doing a Euro on him. And then we some photos and we got him all cleaned up within about an hour.
Yeah.
Hour and 20 minutes.
I think, it was an hour of cleaning after 10 minutes of photos and
so,
hoo-hawn.
Pretty awesome.
I mean, it was super fast. I mean, Kendall just went to town with a knife. Justin held legs. I captured the moments.
Jay was photoing away.
I was getting made fun of because I wasn't helping.
Yeah. I'm like, get to work. He's like, I am to work. But made for an easier pack out for sure with the three of us. So we came around and up the sheep chute, stopped at a spring along the way and washed off and ate lunch. It's kind of enjoyed the moment. It was kind of enjoyable to come back to camp midday, you know, early afternoon like that, and got back here and just said goodbye to Justin. Jay and I enjoyed a nice game of chess. One of the joys of bringing llamas, we have some creature comforts up here. So, but at that point, we had no clue where you were, and we were thinking, man, wouldn't it be cool if South tagged? I thought you were still in the main basin here.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of sitting around waiting to kind of hear this. Storm clouds were starting to brew a little bit there right towards the end of the day. And Justin had already been gone a little bit. And we get I get a text in my GPS.
So we'll pause right there. And then I'll take over on the story.
You bet.
So first thing. So one of the things I neglected to say earlier when I was talking about that buck I hit the day before was I was shooting a fire knock, one of the lighted knocks. And so I had this small hope that I was clinging to that You know, in the darkness, I would be able to see that nock lit up from across the basin. So I wanted to go back up into the, and look in that same basin where I had shot at that buck the day before. And so the, you know, Sunday morning, Wes and I bombed up to the glassing point. And, you know, before light, I was able to glass that whole hillside where that deer had ran to. Well, as much of it as we could see from that angle, and I didn't, you know, didn't catch that nock anywhere. And, so, you know, that was kind of my last hope that I'd be able to recover that buck. And, most of that basin was pretty well blown out, you know, where we had seen 23 bucks the day before, there was just a handful of them in there then, but we did see Basket Case, and he was up high in the basin, surprisingly.
Yeah.
But he ended up, you know, we watched him all morning and he fed alongside. We got some cool digiscope video of him. And I thought for sure he was going to bed over there in the rim rocks. And he walked right past him and then dropped into the jack pines down over the lip where it bails into the canyon. So at that point, we knew it was game over. And we didn't have a whole lot of alternatives. We were talking about going out onto the Fingers to look, which is out past the basin, but Justin had mentioned that if you guys didn't do any good, then you know, where your first stop was in the morning that you guys were looking at or thinking about going out to the Finger. So we didn't want to, you know, double up out there and have three guys out there hunting at the Finger. So we decided we'd look in that basin below camp. And so we bombed back through camp here and stopped and watered the llamas and dumped off some extra gear, and then we dropped over and looked into the basin there below camp and saw. So on the way in, this was Friday before opener, we saw, I don't know, there was 15 or 20 bucks or something like that probably
something
in there.
Like that.
Yeah, there's quite a few deer in there, and there's a couple of, I think there's three.
Yeah, three shooters.
Yeah, so we saw, I think we saw two of the three shooters when we poked our head in there Sunday mid-morning. And they were bedded near this escape chute that kind of goes up and over over the ridge and drops into another basin on the backside of that main ridge line there. And it didn't look real good for a possible stalk, but we kind of watched them for a while. They got up and they you know, fed, and then they rebedded, and I decided, well, you know, it's possible if I come around from the backside and come up over these cliffs, and I was looking with my binoculars and kind of found a way I could get down through the cliffs, I thought that I would have a chance at them. So we rimmed around the head of the basin and got all the way up to the highest point there. And then I sat down to take a little break, and I'm glassing back in the direction that I knew you guys took off to go hunting that same morning, and I spot three guys standing over a dead deer. And I was like, all right, somebody shot a buck. So I got out the spotting scope and looked, and I could see, you know, this buck with nice huge backs on it. And then I was able to determine by watching long enough that it was the tallest guy who shot it, which was Kendall.
I could tell that there was a boonie hat on him.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah,
so I was like, Kendall was wearing that this morning.
The sun hat. Yeah.
So we knew, so that was like at 1 o'clock or something. So we knew Kendall had tagged out. So we kept going. And when we walked across that peak, kind of rimming around the head of the basin, two of the bucks had gotten up and bedded up above this willow patch where these, this group of, you know, bucks were all bedded in the willow patch. There's, I don't know, maybe half a dozen bucks or something, two of them being shooters. And with the two bucks that were bedded up high, kind of on that open face, I knew that it was, you know, there's no chance of us having a play at them because they would pick me off as soon as I came up through the, you know, down through the cliff there. So we went around to the back side of the ridge, and we were going to just check out the basins on the back side of the ridge. And we dropped down, you know, kind of across the top of the first basin. And I decided I'd poke my head up through the kind of jagged cliffs there and look over back at those bucks again. And I poked my head over, and the two bucks that were bedded above the willows had moved, and I assumed that they had just dropped into the willows, you know, got hot and dropped in the willows to feed. And I was like, all right, Wes, man, we got it. So we had dumped our, you know, kind of gutted our packs and left all of our gear. No, we left our entire packs, didn't we?
So we left our entire packs.
Yeah, so we were just, you had the camera and tripod, yes. And I had my bow.
And I had to go, and I had to go back to get
a perspective.
A better perspective. But the problem was I lost the packs. And I couldn't remember under which rim rock the packs were. So South says, like, okay, I'm going to give you like 10 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever to get over there and get situated. Then I'm going to stalk. I'm like, okay. So I run down the cliff, head back towards the packs. And I stand there and I look up and I go, wow, this all looks the same. And so I start going up and down each cliff, like, shoot, because you can't go up to the rocks and then just cross over. You have to go up a chute and then down and then back up to get to the next one. So I went up like three or four chutes, and there's probably like six of them over there, and I was like, screw this. And I hiked as fast as I could to the trail and just backtracked where we came from, and I finally got to the backpacks and got the digiscope and everything and got set up to see South moving his way in on them.
So I snuck down there, did the classic, you know, took my hat off and put my camo face paint on, took my boots off, put my socks on, snuck down there, all total full stealth mode. And I got to within where I figured I was about 10 yards or less, maybe 8 yards from the buck that was highest up where I'd seen him bed before we went around the corner and lost sight of him. And then this buck that was bedded in the willows. This is probably a 25, 26 inch wide 4x4 with kickers sticking off of both sides. And I wasn't sure, you know, with him bedded where he was, if when he stood up, if I'd only be able to see, you know, his head and antlers, or if I'd be able to see his body and get a shot at him. I wasn't sure how deep those willows were. I had another buck that was a decent 4x4 that was to my left, but not one that I really wanted to shoot. And then there was another one, a nice 4x4 that was further down in the willows that was probably going to be out of range. That was a nice 4x4. And I think he had a sticker off of one side on his G2, if I remember correctly. So I had sat there for about half an hour and then I was starting to get antsy. So I decided I was going to chuck some rocks down in below where that 4x4 with the stickers, the twin stickers, was, to see if I could get him to stand up. And I threw six or seven rocks in there before I realized what had happened. I think when we were coming across the top, the very end of the top end of that peak before we disappeared around the corner of the basin, I think that buck that was bedded up above the willows picked me off, and I blew them out. The funny thing was that there was a forked horn that was bedded down at the bottom end of the willows under a jack pine, and he was still bedded there the whole time. So when I poked my head up back into that basin through the jagged cliff there, I could see one of his antlers underneath that jack pine. So I assumed that all of the bucks were there. But I think what happened was the five upper bucks who were, you know, well above where that forked horn was, I think they vacated the premises and that forked horn didn't know. And so I was led to believe that everybody was still there by sighting that lowest buck of the group. So I had burned, I don't know, you know, probably an hour to an hour and a half dinking around with those deer in the basin. So at that point, I came back out and Wes rejoined me, and we continued on our, you know, original plan there, which was to check out the basins on the backside of the ridge. So we hoofed it up to there was a finger ridge that came off perpendicular to the main ridge, and we got on that, the top of that that perpendicular ridge. It was a short one, only maybe, you know, 75 yards or 100 yards long at the most. And we poke our head over into the next basin, and I could see directly below us, there's two bucks that were bedded in the most
Oh, they're such a sweet spot, but they were tucked up, you know, against the hillside, and there was a big rock like right above them. And it was one of those that I could have snuck down and popped up over the top of the rock and had, you know, a 15 or 20 foot shot down on them. And I wanted to take advantage of that opportunity, but the deer were really small. So I decided to let those two pass. But what I did is I walked out that, I just laid my bow down there where Wes was. He stayed put, and I set my bow down, and I just walked out the end of that ridge. I wanted to look off the end of the ridge and then kind of back into the basin from a perspective a little further out, you know, off the end of that finger. So I walked out to the end, and it's kind of a rounded end off the end of this finger ridge. And I started, you know, from the direction we had come, and then started just kind of poking my head out over the end of the ridge and just kept moving as I did. And I get to where I'm back looking into the basin that we're about to descend into. I poked my head over the top, and I could see the back end of this deer bedded maybe 40 yards off the top. And his head was behind a tree, or her head. I didn't know if it was a buck or a doe, but it was like a perfect situation. It was like one of those mountain goat scenarios with all kinds of broken country coming off the end of this ridge, little knobs that were sticking out. And this buck was, or deer, was bedded on this little knob with its head behind a tree. And I had thought that there was two deer behind there. So I backed out, and I hustled back, and I got Wes, and I said, dude, I don't know if this is a buck or a doe, or if it's a shooter buck or a dink or what, but let's go down here and just see how this plays out. So
meanwhile, after South had spotted those two deer that were bedded in a prime location, and he's like, oh, let's just see if we can find something better down here. And I'm just thinking, gosh dang it, I want to get this over-the-shoulder kill shot this year so bad, and there are these two perfect opportunities. And when Sal says that they're small, I wouldn't have called them small. I was like, dude, this is gonna be perfect, let's do this. I was kind of bummed that he was looking for some other deer.
I'm
still just solely thinking about video here anyways. And then Sal says there's a deer over here, so okay, here we go.
So by the time we get back around over to where this buck is, this deer is, because I still don't know whether it's a buck or a doe. I poke my head back over the top. It's still bedded in the same spot. And then so I back off, and I talk to Wes, and I tell him, okay, it's right there. And so we both kind of poke our head back over, and now the buck had stood up, and we could see it's a 4x4, and it's a pretty nice one. So it was like, oh, okay, this is game on. You know, I'm going to shoot this deer if I can get the opportunity. And so the buck turned around. Did it bed right back down again?
So it kind of bedded down again, but right, I'm standing behind South. The deer kind of beds down, and South starts to drop down the hill to get closer. And I take like one step forward, just a half step, and the buck turns and just looks right at me and pegs me. And I'm like, what the heck? I didn't even do anything. And I go, great. Okay. I just blew this stock. This is just fantastic. So I'm holding my camera with my hands at the moment. Somehow extend the three tripod legs, set it down, and keep the camera at the same elevation that it was at. And then raised the camera up a little bit more after it stabilized, and the buck staring at me the entire time. And I'm already zoomed like real far in, and I'm not wearing gloves or anything, and I didn't want to put my hand around the camera to mess with the lens and the focus, so I just left it right where it was at, because I knew that buck was going to see my white hands and just bounce off. So I got it to where it was just focused fine, and I just left it right where it was at.
So meanwhile, so the position that we're on the end of this ridge is we're kind of right on the cusp, on the corner of the end of the ridge where, you know, one step to the right, you're looking into the basin, one step to the left, you're looking off, you know, to the off the end of the ridge, and you can't see into the basin. And so I just took a step to the left,
and then dropped off the end of the ridge where I was out of sight from the roll of the hill there. And I was able to drop down about 10 or 15 yards down from the top. And then I cut around right on top of this little knob. And it was a perfect, situation. I had a nice little flat bench that was, 3 or 4 feet wide. And I just poked my head up over the top. And this buck is bedded and he's looking up the hill. And I figure he's looking at Wes, and I'm just barely poking my head up above where I can see. And the buck is kind of bedded, quartering into me, and I can see all his vitals, except there's a couple of branches, dead branches that are covering the bulk of his body. But I had about a 6-inch wide, maybe a Nerf football sized opening at about 25 yards that I could shoot through and shoot into his vitals. And I'm weighing it back and forth going, man, should I take that shot or should I wait and see if he, when he stands up, if he gives me a better shot angle. So I end up deciding to be patient and wait for the shot. And it was probably less than a minute before he stood
it
up.
It felt a long time because he was staring right at me, and I was just sure I was going to ruin the situation.
So finally the buck stands up, and he actually stands up pretty much broadside to me. And so I get up, kneel up, draw, focus on the spot, cut the shot. And as soon as I shoot, man, that the arrow's on its way, and that buck just lunges forward. And
down a little bit.
Yeah, and down, yep. Lunges forward, and kind of like he's stepping down at the same time. And I hear crack, and that buck kind of wheelies up. I spine shot him and rolls, kind of does this half roll as he's wheeling up, and then falls off about a 10-foot tall cliff, and then hits. When he hits, he just starts rolling, and he rolled probably, 30 yards down the hill. And then his antlers, kind of catch him, and he ends up all piled up. And to make a long, gory story shorter, he ends up rolling, probably 300 or 400 yards down this ridge, and then ends up, down in the bushes. And, I end up emptying my quiver at him. It was just turned into a total debacle. But finally ended up getting him. Broke pretty much all my arrows in my quiver. So, and then by now it's, 6:30 or 7? Probably
late.
7 o'clock at night.
Getting fairly late.
Yeah, so it's probably 7. So we take some pictures, shoot some video.
Minimal.
Yeah, we had to go back up, get our packs, and we dump out all the contents of our pack that we deem non-essential, which included our rain gear, which was the most foolish act of the day. So then we burn back down there. We process the deer just as it's starting to get dark. It's actually just before it starts to get dark, we start to get hit by some raindrops. And so we bag the meat up and grab the antlers and bomb down the ridge like another 300 or 400 yards and hit the trail that we came in on. And we hung the meat up in a tree, that kind of a dead tree that went out at an angle over the trail, and set the antlers up in there. And now it cut loose. Now it's pouring, and I've got on, a pair of Sitka Ascent pants, which are like basically parachute pants. So they're for hot weather, and it's, temperatures dropped. It's pouring rain on us. I've got a lightweight core hoodie on, and, like I said, all of our rain gear is at the top of the mountain, and we've got, probably over an hour of hike, or darn near an hour, to get up to the top from where we were at. And
the only reason I chuckle is because I remember, not because you're for us unfortunate situation, but I remember saying to Jay right as it was starting to get really gnarly and we jumped in our tents, I'm like, man, I hope those guys have their rain gear.
Yeah, well, we had it, we just didn't have it with us.
I'm from Oregon and I'm used to the rain, and it was wet.
That was coming down.
Well, to add insult to injury, not only was it pouring rain on us, but then we had to run the gauntlet through a bunch of along a bunch of trail where the willows were overgrown, and it went from, you know, anywhere from thigh high willows all the way up to shoulder high willows. So not only are we getting poured on, but then the willows are getting soaked, and as we're pushing through the willows, I mean, it was...
That's the worst.
It was a human car wash.
We were getting, pretty much the way it was.
You both were getting quite stinky, so...
Yeah. So we just got hammered. It was so stinking wet. And luckily, you know, by the time we got back up to our packs, the rain had quit, and I had luckily had an extra shirt, so I just stripped off my wet shirt, put my rain jacket on over my shirt, my now dry shirt, took my pants off, which were soaked. All the water had run down, you know, my pant legs, and then funneled into the top of my socks, which then into my boots, and my, you know, my dry feet were dry, whereas now it's like every step you can feel water squishing between your toes. So I just pulled my pants off, put my rain pants on, and it's actually fairly comfortable at that point. But we didn't end up getting back to camp until, what, after 10 or something?
Just before. Just about before 10? Quarter to 10, I think I remember.
All right.
Did you guys run into Justin? Because he had texted me to my Garmin.
I had actually texted Justin and texted you, and then Justin was trail running out because he had a work obligation, and then his phone started going off after he got past us.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So we never...
He messaged back and said that you had a buck down, that you needed help. And then I went out to the point here and texted you, and you were like, nah, we're okay, we're on our way back.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't really need any help.
Kind of after the rain subsided some.
Yeah. And fortunately, Kendall had killed his buck, and we had four llamas up here. Well, we only needed two to get the two bucks out, but Kendall volunteered to run both bucks out to the meat processor, and so I was able to elk hunt the next day, and that was a whole nother adventure. Holy smokes!
I agree.
Yeah, so we got into the elk pretty good on Monday, the third day of the hunt, and we figured there was probably between 60 and 75 head of elk or something like that in this herd, and one big bull that Jay figured go about 320, and then a couple of satellite bulls. Is that right?
Two satellites, two spikes, and that was that herd. And then there was that point with five.
Yeah, we called him in.
Eight cows. About that.
Yeah,
we had Dolores over there.
Yeah, wow.
That was an eventful morning.
Yeah, it was. So we ended up. There was a small, not small necessarily, but there was a mediocre size 5-point bull that was in the bottom of the basin below us, right, you know, at first light. And so we bombed off the top there, and we got to within, you know, probably less than 100 yards of him, and we were trying to call him in. And a few times I thought he was going to come, but he ended up deciding to round his cows out up and dropped off into the canyon out of the basin there. And then we started to make a move to go down after him, and I picked up a cow right on the rim of the canyon. And so we set up, I'm not going to be picky. Well, I say that now.
I remember you saying brown is down when I left, when you guys left camp, yeah. And I went with the llamas.
If it's brown and has antlers, it's going down. If it's brown and doesn't have antlers, it's going down.
Yeah, well, South got a little picky there along the way somewhere and passed up a lot of shot opportunities that I probably, in hindsight, shouldn't have.
Your freezer's calling, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Saying it's waiting for a deposit.
Yep. So at this point, I'm still game on shooting the cow. So here's this cow on the rim of the canyon, and it's only maybe 50 yards, 60 yards from us, something like that. And she's standing there right across this little creek drainage from us. I mean, this little dip in the topography, really. And so I motion to the guys that I see it, this cow, so they start calling. And she carried on and made the weirdest and most continuous stream of cow elk noises I've ever heard. I mean, it was crazy. you guys have spent a lot more time calling elk than me, so you can. I mean,
I've never heard a cow, number one, be that vocal and make anywhere near the kinds of noises she was making.
She was making like emotional noises.
Yeah, it was like it's almost like the length of a bugle coming from a cow, and like a cow call with multiple tones, and it was super unique. It was
varying long, in pitch.
Yeah,
15-20 minutes.
She
would sit there and answer us, and then we'd copy what she was doing, and then she would hit us back. And you said at one point she moved close to us like 10 yards?
Yeah, I thought at that point, you know, she was coming in. And kind of what we theorized is that she probably lost her calf at some point, you know, earlier. And, you know, maybe her calf got killed or something. And,
Lion or a bear or
it was
something.
Either that or she was a 10 and a 10 on the crazy hot matrix.
She was a good looking cow.
Her time had come.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, she never ended up giving us our shot opportunity. But, you know, when we dropped, so we ended up dropping off, that cow dropped off into the canyon. Then we did also, we kind of followed along behind the direction that she went, which was in the direction where that 5-point bull went. And we were coming down the hill and you know, kind of making some noise. So Jay was doing some cow calling to cover our noise as we were coming in, and that 5-point just fired off, man.
He kept answering us the whole way down the hill.
Yeah. And so we were still trying to kind of dropping down to his elevation, and then we realized he was coming. And so we stopped in a little strip of timber, and he came in right into the bottom of the timber, and it was steep enough downhill. I may have been able to get a shot, but there were some branches that were covering, you know, any possible shot opportunity. And so I had to, I just froze, and it was, I don't know, a good 5 minutes or something.
He was staring at us for a long time.
Yeah.
We were shuffling around, and we were calling, trying to get him just to, because a few more steps, I think he would have rounded that pine tree, and I think he would have had like a clear, like 18-yard shot at him. You know?
Yeah. The problem was, is we still had the downhill thermals, and I could feel them hitting the back of my neck, and I knew, you know, it was kind of at a little bit of an angle. And I knew if he kept going forward that he was going to catch my wind. So he took a couple of steps and went behind some jack pines. And I started dropping so that, you know, if he popped out and he hadn't caught my scent yet, maybe I could get a shot before he winded me. And he ended up winding me and blew out. And so, you know, that kind of was game over for those guys. But we had seen...
Meanwhile, there were 60 elk on the other side of the basin.
Yeah, with a couple of bulls that were bugling
all morning.
So we dropped down into the bottom of the canyon, then started back up the other side. And we got, I don't know, probably 2/3 of the way up to them, probably. And then we started bumping into the cows that were on the lower end of the group. And all of a sudden, they just picked up and decided they were going to move to, you know, the other side of the canyon that we had just come from. And they took off like almost at a thundering run down the hill. And it wasn't because they had picked us up. It just seemed like they wanted to relocate.
They were just moving to a different area.
So we end up chasing, you know, running down into the bottom, and they crossed through this meadow, and it was just like this parade of elk. And at that point we saw how big the herd bull was, and it was a big bull.
That's when South's eyes got real big.
I shifted from meat hunter to antler hunter. And I had seen, you know, in years past being in this area, I kind of had an idea of what these elk were going to do. So we dropped down the canyon a little ways to get, you know, ahead of them where I anticipated where they were going to go. And then once we got down a couple hundred yards, then we just started climbing as fast as we could. And we got out ahead of them. And then they just started filing across in front of me. And I was still trying to climb in elevation to get closer because they were coming crossing, you know, like 60 yards. And I got to about 40. And then it was like this almost steady stream, you know, it'd be 5, 8, 10 elk at a time would cross in front of me, and then it would pause for a moment, and then another group would come through, and at one point this raghorn comes by, and
I let him go through some these jack pines, and then I cow called, just did a mouth call to him, stopped him. He's about 40 yards. And I thought maybe he was close to like 35 or something. I just didn't give him enough distance, and I shot, and my arrow went underneath him. And he kind of did this pogo hop, and then I took off and you know, to catch up the rest of them. And then it was like they started progressively crossing higher and higher, and I kept having to climb to keep within bow range. And at one point I had them crossing between 25 and 30 yards in front of me. And I knew that that big bull would be at the back of the herd. And at this point, you know, I had cows crossing well within my effective range. And that was like, oh, that one's big and juicy. That one's going to make a lot. That would make a lot of freezer packages. And I'm just like, in one hand going, dude, you should just shoot that thing. And then the other hand going, man, but that big bull is going to be crossing right behind these other cows, just the same as all the other elk have. And I'd be kicking myself if I dump the string on this cow. And then the next animal that comes out is that giant bull. So I'm sitting here, I'm holding, you know, I don't know, what was that? Probably 5, 7, 8 minutes of action.
I felt like it was longer than that.
It could have been.
Probably was longer than that, to be honest. It's almost like South was standing in front of a buffet line, and he just was waiting for the salmon to come out or something. And
it was crazy. I mean, it was, there were so many elk that it was, you know, I would be watching elk in front of me, trying to anticipate when I could move to gain a little bit more elevation. And I would take a step when all their heads were turned, only to look further to my right and have another one that had just popped out of the ditch and then pick me off. And surprisingly, I mean, some of them, a couple of them kind of got a little bit ouchy, you know, going, wait, I don't like the looks of that thing. But none of them blew out. None of them barked. None of them acted really spooked. And I had, you know, elk in front of me 25 to 30 yards for a long period of time. And finally, that bull, the big bull, comes out. And there's a stand of pines that are a little bit above where all these elk have been coming out. And, of course, he comes out right into the stand of pines. So what the elk were doing this, towards the tail end of that herd, is they were coming out about 25 to 30 yards above me. And then they're in their this opening, they're turning and then walking straight up above me, and then disappearing, you know, at about 40 to 45 yards. Well, that herd bull came out at about 40 in that thick stand of pines. I could see antler tines, and I could catch parts of, you know, of his body here and there. But there's no way to snake an arrow through. And he hooked those cows that were, you know, just about to disappear, pushed them up and out of sight, and that was the end of that big bull as far as him being in my life. So the moral of that story is, you know, the proverbial bird in the hand, and I have, it's now Wednesday, and I have no elk meat anywhere near my freezer.
And that was Monday?
That was Monday, yeah. Yep.
Monday.
Yeah. To make matters worse, South's bucks just totally demolished.
He, from rolling down that hill and then me turning him into a pincushion, he there's a lot of meat, a lot of burger that's going to get made.
Yeah, in fact, South, you asked me to apologize to the guy at the processing place, and in fact, I still had the two meat bags. I'd taken him in and just set him on his little counter on his little in the garage side. And went out kind of the front little, you know, meeting area, and I had pulled my quarters out of each of the bags, and I left the bone in on mine, and I said, I said my friend wanted me to make sure that I apologize to you because it's pretty hammered. And he goes, oh, is it bad? And I said, well, he goes, I haven't looked at it. Let me go see. And he disappears for like a minute, comes back, he goes, oh yeah, that's bad. And he goes, and I've seen a lot of stuff. And I go, I'm like, yeah, he wanted me to apologize.
I pride myself in taking good care of the meat. You know, when I cut it up, it tastes better. It's, you know, easier to deal with and all that. And I usually, you know, process my own meat, but, you know, we've got another week up here on the mountains, so it made sense to have somebody else handle it for me. And of course, it'd be the worst one I've ever had that somebody else has got to deal with. And oh man,
isn't
I felt
terrible.
Isn't
that the one that you want someone else to deal with though?
Well, I guess in some sense, I'm sure it's going to cost me at least double though. But is what it is, you know. I'll get a lot of burger out of it, that's for sure.
You always use burger.
Yep. No, we eat a lot of that at home. So now today's Wednesday. We've pretty well blown out our elk spot in that basin. And so Wes and I are considering moving, relocating to a new, you know, another part of our unit here. I mean, same general area, but just picking up and moving camp over and finding some fresh country to look at. We've got until really we could pull out as late as Monday morning and still get Wes back on the plane.
Woo.
I don't know. We'd have to get up real early Monday morning probably to get you back on the plane there in Denver, but we'll have to kind of play it by ear. There's a couple I'd like to bounce around a little bit, check out some spots I haven't looked at in the last couple of years. And so I'm pretty excited about, I'm not very excited about moving camp. It's a pain in the butt, but I am excited about looking at some new stuff. So meanwhile, Kendall, you picked up an elk tag in town, so you've got a couple of days to chase some elk around, huh?
Yeah, I couldn't, I kind of was in town, got back, barely got to meet the processor, and cleaned up, went and grabbed some dinner and went to the grocery store. And of course, the sign says, hunting tags available here. And I was like, let's see, my bow's still on the mountain. It's Monday night. So yeah, picked up an elk tag, came in Tuesday. And then just in time to get back to camp and up over the ridge, drop down to the lip of the of that basin to see if I could see some elk and watch you guys walking up out of the bottom.
Oh, you actually saw us come up out of the bottom?
Yeah. So I thought, well, and then that little squall came through, that little rain, and I just needed some more exercise, really. But
I don't know why, man. You had a 10-mile hike getting back in here.
But then, yeah, this morning, so we're waiting for Justin will come in tonight. And we've located him. Jay and I went over back to kind of where I killed and located about 25 bucks. I think I counted four that I think are Justin worthy. My standards are a lot less. I have probably 18 to 20 that I would shoot, and
probably 25 I would have shot.
So we've got some, so sent a text message to him. He's probably in some board meeting or something like that. So I told him he needed to get here fast because there's bucks coming out of the woodwork. So he's pretty excited. But we might, I don't know what we'll do this afternoon. Jay and I are going to try to find some elk. I probably will shoot anything brown, given that I just want to get something in the freezer.
Yeah, I'm back to that train of thought again. It's pretty hard, though, when you have a bull that you are pretty sure is going to follow the same direction as all these cows have been coming out. You know, I mean, it'd be cool to shoot a bull, but then also you're going to get, you know, probably another at least 30% more meat. So it's it can make it challenging there to dump a cow when you could get, you know, that much more meat and especially a 320 class bull on public land in Colorado is not very common.
Mm-mm. So any lessons learned from the past few days, South, aside from selectivity of elk meat?
Well, Kendall packed in a couple of cantaloupes when he came back in, and cantaloupe in the mountains is
way better than cantaloupe at home.
Yeah.
Super sweet. Oh, that was so
indeed
good.
It was a fantastic couple of cantaloupes. We each got a half a cantaloupe, and man, the food fantasies were going hard yesterday, especially when Kendall was telling us what he had for dinner the night before. He was killing me.
At that French restaurant.
He was about ready to run me off the mountain.
And then those peaches, I brought in some peaches last night from the fruit stand as well.
Yeah, we had peaches and cantaloupe, and it's things you just don't get to experience there in the mountains. But as far as lessons learned, there's always something to pick up on. And you know, with the elk, this is the longest I've 3 days, well, basically 2.5 days now that we've been chasing elk since we've been up here.
So I'll remind you,
what's
the
that?
First year I came up here, you killed buck on day two as well.
Yep. That's right, huh?
Yep. And we were battling a little bit different weather then.
Yeah, that weather was miserable. Hopefully we don't get a lot more of that. We got hit pretty good with rain last night, just as we were tucking into the tents for the night. But it didn't last. Oh, it was maybe less than an hour.
Yeah, half hour.
Yeah.
It's been beautiful.
Yeah, but we got sustained bad weather there a couple of years ago. So hopefully we won't get more of that, because that makes the hunting pretty tough, although it can turn the elk on, but it didn't 2 years ago there. So we'll see how it goes. Hopefully we'll fill a couple of elk tags before we head off the mountain. And Justin, he's only got, what, 2 days or so to hunt?
Yeah, so 3 days, I think, total.
All right. Yeah, so he's going to be pushing it hard. But we'll catch back up on another podcast. It might just be Wes and I, as these guys, I think Jay and Kendall are going to stay here and wait for Justin's arrival and then help him out with shooting a buck there on his end. But we'll keep you guys in the loop. We'll get back on the horn here and let you know how the action unfolds. Appreciate you guys listening.
Thanks.
Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox, and I'm running solo right now. This is actually about 2 weeks after our last recording. Had a really unfortunate and tragic turn of events there almost immediately following the recording that you just finished listening to. Shortly after that, Wes and I broke down our camp, loaded up the llamas, and we're super excited to strike out for a part of the unit that was a little deeper, further in from the trailhead, and get into some new elk hunting there. We had to go through do some off trail, as far as off designated trail stuff, and with the llamas, we're going to be cutting about probably 5 or 6 miles of trail off, and you know, stuff going through an area that that basically a shortcut along some game trails, and we're going along a spot that was very doable from a hiking standpoint and doable from a packing standpoint. I scouted the section of trail that we're going to be walking. We stopped the llamas and I hiked down through there, and there was a steep section of trail. It wasn't real wide, but, plenty wide for, the llamas to get down and us to get down safely. And so we had I had dropped down through the section first, leading one of the llamas, and Wes was following behind me. And the trail dropped down, like I said, a short, steep section. It was a cliff on one side and a steep bank, to our left. So a cliff to the right, steep bank to the left. As soon as you got past that short, steep section, then the trail leveled out, still had the cliff there to the right, but it was, basically a level walking path at that point. And, I had already gone through that steep section, was, walking across that level spot, and I was probably, 20 yards in front of Wes. He had just come down that steep section, and when he hit that level section, he stepped up off the trail onto the bank, just in case the llama, tried to get past him. Then he was, he would be on the uphill side of the trail, so the llama could get past him if he was. Sometimes, if you get an animal in a, whether there's some separation, and in hindsight, I should have stayed closer, because maybe
one of two things happened, is that llama got nervous going down the steep part, or maybe I got too far out in front of the second, you know, llama there. But whatever the case, the llama, instead of Wes's llama, instead of trying to get past him on the trail, tried to lunge past him above Wes on the hill there, knocked Wes over. In the process, the llama lost its balance, fell, rolled over the top of Wes, and because of how steep the hillside was, leading towards the cliff, the llama kept rolling. Wes had a hold of the lead rope, and the llama quickly ate up the slack on the lead rope, started dragging Wes as it was rolling down the hill towards the cliff. And I heard the commotion and spun around, and Wes was yelling at the llama to get up. And I saw, you know, what was happening, and I started screaming at Wes to let go, let go, let go, as this llama was, you know, pulling Wes towards the cliff, and the llama was heading for it itself. And as Wes's recount, he said that he saw the back end of the llama go over the edge and just, you know, knew at that point there was no saving it, and he had to let go of the lead rope. And I caught, you know, the sight of the llama going over the cliff, and then I couldn't see anything for a couple seconds or so, it seemed. And then I saw a llama bounce skyward and then disappear from sight, and then tumbling, and then panniers flying. And it's pretty traumatic. It was a really traumatic experience. It's even traumatic recounting it. And I had a hard time getting to sleep that night. It was really a pretty scary experience. And, you know, Wes is a new dad. I had visions of him getting pulled over the cliff by this llama. And, you know, I'm grateful that he was safe. Nothing happened. Incidentally, our wives got slightly different, more tame versions of this story without, the graphic detail or the kind of potential danger that Wes was in. So if you know Wes's wife, or if you know my wife, then don't recount the story to her or them, because they got, like I said, slightly edited versions of the story, and it's neither one of us like to be untruthful to our significant others, but then realize that also there's, you know, needlessly worrying them doesn't do any of us any good. So I didn't want my wife to be upset unnecessarily, or you know, lose sleep or be concerned on future hunts or whatever. So they just got the story. The llama lost its balance, you know, took a bad step, lost its balance, and went over the cliff. But, my llama, having seen what I just saw, started flipping out, and, I was in a, you know, fairly safe spot, but still needed to control the llama that I had, because, you know, he could, had he decided to go the direction the other one went, we would have been faced with a repeat of that scenario. So I tried to lead, you know, mine off that hillside as best as I could. And as soon as we got off that trail and onto where it was just a steep hillside, and I'm talking, you know, the Man from Snowy River steep, if you've ever seen that movie, and you remember the scene where he goes over the that edge riding his horse, and he's like laid back over the saddle. It was something like that. And my llama wanted to get down to the other one, and was dragging me down this hill. And I was trying to hold it back, and was getting dragged down this extremely steep hillside, which I was afraid that I had a, you know, heavy pack on, and I was afraid that I was going to get rolled and start losing, you know, my balance, start rolling down the hill after it. and was certainly steep enough that serious injury could have resulted or would have resulted. And then I had the same fear still for my llama because that, like I said, that hillside was so steep. If this guy lost his balance, he was going to be doing the same thing. So I got dragged down the hill, I don't know, 10 yards or something by this thing. And finally I ended up actually breaking my finger, the last joint of my finger. And, I don't know if it's just I didn't go to the hospital and get x-rays, but I'm pretty sure it was a break anyway. It was probably just a hairline fracture, either that or, I don't know, dislocated, but it turned black and blue there at the end. But anyway, that llama took off. I finally let go of the lead, just decided, heck with it, man. It's going to kill both of us, or one of us. And so I let it go, and it ran down the hill to catch up with his buddy. And by this time, the llama that had tumbled off the cliff and had shed both of its panniers and the pack saddle, it busted going over, had miraculously stumbled or staggered to its feet. And at first, I thought the thing was going to be okay. And it was probably got a serious concussion going over because it was flopping all around, and I thought it had broken limbs or something. And then it got to its feet, and by the time I got down to it, it was standing, but it had a huge gash in its chest. It was just pouring blood. And make a long graphic story shorter, it succumbed to its injuries about 10 or 15 minutes later, despite the efforts that we made with first aid with this blood clot material, the powder that we had. And Wes's knee, which was already had gotten messed up during a misstep right after I shot my buck, was now in worse shape because he had jammed it trying to prevent the llama from going over. So, you know, he wasn't going to be able to carry weight. So now we had two llamas worth of gear and my backpack and his backpack. And so it became clear very quickly that, you know, we had more weight than we could carry out under our own power. And so I made the decision to go back over the mountain to camp and borrow the other two llamas, and we were just going to have to, you know, abort our trip and get our stuff back, because this was now, what was it, Wednesday afternoon, and everyone else was planning on blasting out of there on Saturday. So I went back up, got the other llamas, let the guys know what happened. You know, they of course wanted to help out, but it really, there wasn't anything to do as far as extra manpower was concerned. I picked up the other two llamas. I brought them back over the mountain. We loaded back up and then hiked out that night. And I think we were probably back in about 11 or 12 miles because we had to come out through a different section of trail at that point. Got back to the truck that night, slept for several hours, and then I got our quote-unquote loner llamas, you know, back loaded up or strung together in a string there, and then hauled them back up to base camp and turned around and ran back out. And so, geez, I did 30 miles in like 13 and a half hours over the course of, I think it was like 20 or 22 hours, something like that. So it was a really weird, strange way to end a hunt that had already had, you know, several unfortunate incidents in it. I mean, I filled my tag and I was really happy about that. But then at the same time, I hit and lost that buck. Still don't know. I haven't got a chance to see the video yet on a bigger screen to see, kind of dissect what happened on it. But when Wes gets that hard drive out to me, I'll take a look at it and see if I can figure out what happened. And then that, you know, spine shot on my, on the buck I ended up tagging. You know, I don't like to make, I prefer to make, you know, much quicker, more humane kills, but we watched the review, the tape on that, and that thing jumped the string on me, which, you know, is another potential learning experience there, or another learning experience in that that deer was aware of our presence and, you know, maybe with better discretion, I should have passed up the shot and, because he was aware of our presence. But I mean, the odd thing was, is that, you know, the deer the day before that I shot at, he was aware of us and, stood there and till the arrow hit him. So it's a hard one to figure on that in, you know, on that case there. You do, you know, everything right, or, you know, like I said, almost everything right. You know, maybe I shouldn't have taken the shot. But any case, it was just a series of weird situations, and, you know, the hunt, my hunt got cut in half from a 10 day to a 5 day or 4.5 day hunt, really. So pretty bummed about that. I was super excited to get in there. The elk were, you know, we were finding elk daily, and Kendall ended up actually shooting a bull on Friday. And I was already back home by then, and then called me up, or texted me rather, said he shot a bull and I wanted to see if I could find a number for a horse packer, because at that point they were overloaded with, you know, having an elk and three camps to pack out. And then they were still wanting to try to hit their Saturday deadline, which he was able to get out on Saturday. They got a packer up there and they had a long day of packing meat on Friday, to get it to a place where the horse packer could get to, but they got it done. And Kendall, managed to shoot a nice buck and a nice 5-point bull at the same time. So super happy for him. Justin rolled back into town Wednesday night. We saw him at the trailhead shortly after we got back down to the bottom, and he chased around a basket case on one day, and he thought basket case would probably go about 195 inches. So huge buck. He got under 50 yards for quite some time, but didn't realize he was that close to the buck. And so he was, he said that buck was super wary, which makes me a little more relieved, I guess, that the thing, you know, drop down into the jack pines and I didn't have to go educate it further, but he was quite impressed with the size of it. But in the end, Justin ended up eating his tag, that trip, having to leave in the middle of the hunt to go back to work really screwed him. And I've talked to him since then and he's pretty bummed out, you know, about losing so much of his hunt there. And I don't think that that will happen again. I think the next time, if they schedule a business, you know, a board meeting in the middle of his hunt, he's going to tell them, I'm sorry, but, this is my week this year. So hopefully they have, better discretion there at the bank that he works at and schedule it at a different time. But any case, for me, that's what I've got on the hunt schedule for September. I'm going to try to cob together something later in the season here, but I'm just back cranking out bows and actually really enjoying myself. I mean, it's killing me being here working in my shop and knowing so many other people are out there hunting right now. And I'm, you know, enclosed in four walls, but, you know, I'm doing something I love doing and I'm catching up on bow orders that, you know, that are behind schedule from the move. So I feel like I'm doing the right thing, even though I'm not out there hunting. and I'm getting to live vicariously. I talked to Cody. Steve Speck shot a bull a couple days ago here in Colorado. Cody said the bulls are just super fired up and bugling like crazy. It sounds like they're having a blast. Cody almost got a shot at a 350 class bull. So they're getting into good animals. Trent, his partner there in Born and Raised Outdoors, Trent Fisher, shot a nice bull in Wyoming. They piled up some with the Hushin crew there in Oregon, Roosevelt bulls. And man, those guys are on a roll. So I'm super anxious to get Cody back on the podcast, do a catch up on that. So any case, I will keep you guys posted, try and get another recording out here shortly, but it's probably going to be a couple of week gap because my editor is going to go out and hunt himself. Imagine that. I'm super happy for him that he gets to go out there and try and fill an elk tag. So if I don't talk to you guys or you don't hear from me in the next couple of weeks, know that there will be more podcasts coming shortly thereafter. Thanks for listening.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Western Bowhunter podcast, please remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so that new episodes will automatically be downloaded to your device as soon as they become available. And while you're on iTunes, please take the time to give us a review. This will help us in the iTunes rankings and will help the podcast grow. Share it with your friends on social media. If you've got a topic that you would like to see covered or a guest that you'd like to hear from on a future episode, email it to South or Cody at info@thewesternbowhunterpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.
At GoHunt.com, our goal is to be the very best at what we do. We are constantly putting value and new information at our users' fingertips. It's our job to always go above and beyond for our customers. We don't want you to stress days of researching or paying hunting consultants to give you unreliable and opinionated information before your hunt. That's why we're giving you the power and ability to find exactly what you want when you want it. And with the introduction of draw odds and filtering 2.0, it's never been easier. So why wait? Join the movement today and start finding the perfect hunt for you. Go Hunt Insider, the new breed of hunter. Visit GoHunt.com/insider and join the movement.